Okay, we're going to start here with the Gemara on the top of Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is continuing with the story about Bava ben Buta and Herod and Hordus, which Gemara wanted to know, how could Bava ben Buta give advice to Hordus to destroy the Beit HaMikdash in order to rebuild it? So Gemara began the story of how this transpired in terms of how Hordus had risen to power, and then after he had risen to power, he ended up killing out all the Chachamim because they would not acquiesce to his ascendancy to the kingship. And then he left Baba ben Buta to take Itzamine, to take advice from him. So the Gemara begins, Ahadrele Klila Daile. He made for him a crown made out of quills that are either belong to a porcupine or to a hedgehog. And Nakrinu Leine. And either because of the crown that was placed around his head poked these quills poked out his eyes, or they actually, he went ahead and intentionally had his eyes removed. Yom Echad, Ato, so one day, Hordus came along, but Yotiv Kamei sat in front of Bava ben Buta. Obviously, now he's blind and he couldn't see him. Amei Chazimar, Hay Avdo Bisha, do you see this awful servant, what he is, or this awful slave, what he's done, Mike Alvit? So Hordus is speaking about himself, but to Bava ben Buta, he's trying to tempt him or ensnare him, entrap him to speak poorly or about Herod. So he says, what should I do to him? Bava ben Buta responds to Herod, what should I do to this bad slave? You should curse him. It says in the Pasuk in Kohelet, even if your thoughts, one should not curse a king. He's not really a king. This is Hordu speaking about himself. Even if he's just a wealthy individual, in the closed quarters of your bedroom, you should not curse the rich. So as he says, right? So maybe he's not even rich. And even if he is not rich, and he's just a nasi, he's just a leader, when it comes to any leaders of your nation, one, you're not allowed to curse them or speak improperly about them. But we know that that's a qualified statement because it's a nasi be'amcha. So that's what Herod responds to them. That's only refers to or is true of someone who acts appropriately, who's Jewish, and keeps Torah mitzvot. He's not, this individual, Herod speaking by himself, does not keep the mitzvot. He's not part of amcha. So Mistafina Mine says, I'm embarrassed, I'm scared of him. He says, nobody can tell him. It's just me and you here. We'll keep the secret. Nobody will know when you curse him. The end of the Pasuk. So far we quoted the first parts of the Pasuk. And then the second part of that Pasuk is, so whether in your thoughts or in the privacy of your bedroom, do not curse. Why? Because this is the conclusion of the Pasuk. Because the birds of the sky will take the sound. And those winged animals, will tell over the matter. So you don't curse even in the privacy of one's home because secrets have ways of escaping or getting found out. So now finally Herod says, Anahu, he reveals himself to Bava ben Buta, says, I am Herod. If I know that the Rabbanan were so careful with their thoughts, their words, I would not have killed them out. What should I do in order to rectify the sin that I did of killing out all of the Talmid Chachamim? You wiped out or you destroyed the light of the world. Dichtiv says about Kiner Mitzvah B'Torah Or. So the reference here is to Torah Or. So Torah Or is the Talmid Chachamim who bring Or to Olam through the Torah. So what should you do to rectify the fact that you extinguished the light of the world? You should go and then try to rekindle the light of the world. Dichtiv. So what is the rekindling of the light of the world? It says, B'Naru Elav Kol HaGoyim. So it says in the Pasuk in Yishayahu, La'atid Lavo, B'achvit HaYamim, that Nechonia Har Beit Hashem B'Rosh HaYarim, that the Har Beit HaMikdash will be up on the highest of mountains, V'Naru Elav Kol HaGoyim. Now here, the real interpretation of the word Naru Elav comes from the word Nahar, to stream, that all the nations will stream towards the Beit HaMikdash. But obviously the Gemara is playing on the word Nahar, which means also, in Aramaic means Nahar, means light. V'Naru Elav Kol HaGoyim, that it will be a light, right, that will draw all of those of the nations. Some people say this is what Bava ben Buta responded to Herod. He blinded, he knocked out the eyes of the world. right? So he's talking about a par helam davar shel tzibur. So here it says that if minei aida, the minei aida, who are the eyes of the people? The eyes of the people are the leaders, the talmid chachamim, the beis din. And I assume that Boba and Boot is also playing on the fact that they had blinded or gouged out his eyes, and therefore he says that minei aida, that he had blinded the eyes of the world. He should go back and take care of that which is the pupil of the world, the center of the world. This is in Yechezkel when it's describing, Yechezkel is giving nevuah to the people of Bavel, describing to them that Hashem will destroy the Mikdash, and that they will get news of the fact that the Mikdash is destroyed. And says, V'nini mechalel et Mikdashi, I will profane my Mikdash. Ge'onuschem, the pride of your strength. Machmad enechem, the darling of your eyes. So you see again that the Mikdash is referred to as Machmad enechem. So you should go ahead and be osake in the Mikdash, which is Machmad enechem, to rectify the fact that you eliminated the eyes of the world. You eliminated the Talmid Chachamim. So Amalei, so Herod now responds to Boba and Buddha, says, Mastafina mi Machuta. Now Herod ruled here, he was the Judea at the time, was under the dominion of the Romans, and Herod ruled over Judea, but he was at the
behest and whim of
Romans, and subject to their rules or their authority. So Amalei, so Boba and Buddha suggested to him, Shata shlicha vilezel shata, send a messenger to Rome in order to ask permission. It should take him a year to get there. V'akev shata, and he should wait there a year. He should spend a year there. V'hadar shata, and take a year to return. So that'll give you 3 years of a buffer. Ad hachi v'hachi, during that interim period, satrit le, take it down, ubanit le, and then rebuild it. So Avid Hachi, so he did this. Shalchule, so now he sent it over that 3 year period. Herod renovates the Mikdash. So Shalchule, so the Roman government, right, the Roman emperor sent back to Herod and with regards to his request to rebuild the Mikdash or to renovate the Mikdash. Imlo Sadarta Altistor. If you haven't taken it down yet, meaning that you haven't begun the renovation process, don't take it down. Vim Satarta, if you've already taken it down, Altivne, don't rebuild it. Vim Satarto Vanita, if you already took it down, renovated and rebuilt it, Avde Bisha, you're a bad slave or a bad representative of the Roman government, but the Avden mit Malchin, after you've already done what you want, then you come to ask permission. Im Zainech Alach, if you think your weapons are on you, meaning that how did he ascend to the kingship? He ascended to the kingship by killing out all of his masters. And then we know Sifrach Khan. We know we have your Sefer Yuchsin. We know where you really are. You're really, really a slave. Lo Rako, you're not a king. Velo Barako, and you're not a prince. You're not the son of a king. Hurdus Avdo Klanina Mit Avid. Hurdus is a slave, and Klanya Mit Avid, and he became a Ben Chorim, a free person through himself. He was the one who freed himself. He wasn't freed in any way, and he's really a slave. So Gemara wants to know, my Raka, I translate Raka as kingship, because Gemara says, Machuta. What's Raka? Raka means kingship. How do I know that? Dichtiv. Because it says, by David HaMelech, Ani Anochi Hayom Rach Umashuach Melech. I am today, Rach, you can either say weak or young, fresh behind, you know, wet behind the ears. Mashuach Melech, I just became king. This is after Yoab ben Tzruya killed Avner, and David HaMelech is upset about the way that the Bnei Tzruya, the way that they had acted. But he says, today I am young as a king, and this was not the right thing to do, to kill out Avner. That from here we know this. It says by Yosef. It says when he gets Merkivat the Mishneh, it says they called before him Avrech, that they should either bow down or they called him the Avrech, right? Avrach b'shanim. So the word Rach is also there used in the context of kingship. So Amre. So we have a memro the Gemara brings. The Gemara brings this in Sukkah with a set of memrot that say a similar type of genre, which is someone who did not see this, never saw this. Zimri Mishalura Binyan Hurdus, whoever did not see the building of Hurdus, meaning that the Mikdash of Hurdus, Lora Binyan Emiyamav, never saw a beautiful building in his lifetime. So just to take a small
tangent and
moment here to describe about the Mikdash of Hurdus. When it comes to the original Mikdash, the Mikdash of Shlomo HaMelech, as well as the Mikdash of Ezra that he built, they were built on the top of Har HaMoriah. Har HaMoriah, like any other mountain, was a mountain. So they built the Mikdash sitting on the mountaintop. So they used the bedrock of the mountain in order to be a part or support for the Mikdash. And then they propped or placed the Mikdash by creating a floor on top of the mountain. And that was the base of the Mikdash and the area of Har HaBayit around it. But Hurdus goes ahead and does, in order to expand the Mikdash, she does something innovative, but that renovation is what allows his building to be significantly larger than that of Shlomo Melech and Ezra. And what he does is he builds retaining walls around the mountain. They have a mountain. A mountain has a slopes that go. It comes, reaches a peak, and has slopes going down to all sides. So the peak of the mountain, or the flat top of the mountain, is limited in its space, and that's why Shlomo Melech and the Mikdash of Ezra were limited in their size. What Herod does is he takes walls, and Herod was famous for doing this in terms of changing the topography of mountains, either making mountains higher or lower. So over here, what he does is he builds retaining walls around the mountain. He builds retaining walls that reach the height of the peak of the mountain. Then what he does with those retaining walls is he fills them in with dirt. By filling them in with dirt, he basically now levels out the entire mountain, the entire Har HaMoriah. So now, from the base of the mountain, or not all the way, but close to the base of the mountain till the peak, he now makes from that outside of the base where he's built these retaining walls, he flattens out, he fills it with dirt till they're all level with the peak of the mountain. So now he's created a plateau that is equal to the top of the mountain. By doing that, he significantly expanded the area that is classified as Har HaBayit. And that is today, when you go to visit the Makom HaMikdash, when you go there, that's exactly what you see. The Kotel HaMaravi, the western wall, which is not the lone wall there, the western wall is there, as well as the southern walls, and the eastern walls, and part of the northern side. All of those walls all exist, and those walls are nothing to do with the Mikdash itself. They are not walls of the Mikdash, but rather they are walls that are retaining walls of the mountain. So the Kotel HaMaravi is a wall that holds up the dirt that was filled in by Herod in order to create this large, large Har HaBayit. And if you go to places like above Eshet Torah and other places where you can look down at the Har HaBayit, you can see that the Har HaBayit is a massive, massive plateau. It has two levels to it. The area has two levels to it. And that large, large plateau is able to be created by the fact that Herod leveled out the area of Har HaBayit. Now, on the northern side, there's less because Yerushalayim actually slopes, the grade of Yerushalayim slopes upward towards that side. So when you come down to the southwestern corners and southeastern quarters, that's the deepest points of the walls. The walls are massive. If you go to the Kotel today, you can see that the walls that you look up are only about a third to half of what the walls that really existed. If you look down, if you actually go to the southern excavations, you can stand at the road level of what was in the time of the Romans, and the walls are massive. What he had to build, the structure he had to build to get to the peak of the mountain, were massive in order to become the retaining walls. This is also the reason that the Gemara discusses in Yoma and other places that there were mechilot lo nitkashu. There were tunnels underneath the Mikdash. Now, when you're talking about bedrock and built on top of a mountain, to talk about tunnels is very difficult, because in order to quarry out or carve tunnels, that would have been a significant amount of work, and unlikely that they had an extensive tunnel system. Whereas when it comes to the Mikdash that Herod built, because Har HaBayit is mostly landfill, I mean, because he's filled it in, and it's soft dirt, to build mechilot, to big tunnels, is very easy. You could just dig into the dirt. As well as if you go to the southern side, or really the eastern side, you can say the Sharim that the people entered from, and the Shar Chuda is an area where you enter into the Mikdash in the time of the Mikdash they used to enter in, below the Har HaBayit level. They used to enter in from there, and then take staircases up, and then come up to the level of Har HaBayit. And again, that was possible to be done, or was possible because of the fact that the area was landfill. And so therefore they were able to build a tunnel and a staircase that brought them up into Har HaBayit, even though they entered from outside of Har HaBayit. And that's why it's called the Chulda, because you come up onto the Har HaBayit like a Chulda. You crawl underneath and you come up on top. Not literally crawling, but you come from the tunnel underneath onto the plateau of the Har HaBayit. So again, when people go to the Kotel HaMaravi is not part of the Mikdash, it's part of the retaining walls. Why the Kotel HaMaravi is so kadosh is not because of the Kotel itself, not because of the wall itself, which is the retaining wall of the mountain, but rather because it's the closest point to the Kodesh HaKodoshim. The Mikdash that sat on the plateau that Herod had built actually sat pushed towards the northwestern side of the Har HaBayit. It was not centered on Har HaBayit, that the Mishnayot describe, that it wasn't exactly centered, but rather pushed towards the northwestern side. And therefore, the Kodesh HaKodeshim sat closer to the west, further north, and that's if you take the tunnels, part of the tunnels that you go, the western wall tunnels, you reach a point which is Mul Kodesh HaKodeshim, opposite the Kodesh HaKodeshim, because if you move further and further north along that western wall, you reach a point where you're exactly opposite where the Mikdash stood. So that's why that place would be the holiest place, because that is actually the place that is Mul Kodesh HaKadoshim. And the Mishnah in Brachot tells us, when you daven outside of Eretz Yisrael, you daven towards Eretz Yisrael. When you daven in Eretz Yisrael, you daven towards Yushalayim. And when you daven in Yushalayim, you daven towards Makom HaMikdash. You daven towards Mikdash. And the Mikdash, you daven towards Kodesh HaKadoshim. So here, when you're standing at the Kotel HaMaravi, one probably should turn themselves a little to the left towards the northern side, which would be directed towards the Makom HaMikdash and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Until you reach the point, obviously, of Mul Kodesh HaKadoshim, the tunnels, then you would stand directly facing the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and as you pass further north, you'd face to the right or back south towards the Mikdash or the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So that's why the Gemara describes here that the building that Herod had built was so beautiful and wondrous, was because Herod really expanded the expanse of Har HaBayit, and through that was able to build a much or significantly larger Mikdash that was renovated and became a massive Mikdash HaSheni, the one that we know of, the models, and that which is described in the Mishnayot. And that's what the Gemara says here, Mishalara binyan urdus lara binyan emiyamav. That person didn't see this gorgeous Mikdash that was put together by Herod, didn't see a wonderful, gorgeous building put together by Herod in their lifetime. I mean, it was a edifice, it was a gorgeous building, a work of art and architecture in their time. I mean, it was done through slave work and enslaving Jews and others to build it, and he worked them very hard. I'm sure many died building the Mikdash, but Herod, as a king, was able to ensure that in a three-year period they were able to put together the Mikdash and put the Har HaBayit. And you know, you can see from the size of the stones that are there at Har HaBayit that there are massive stones and massive amount of work, and today you can find their quarries around Yerushalayim where they took those stones from to bring them to the Mikdash. So Mara says, but my man, yeah, how did he build it? What did he do that made it such an aesthetic building? Amarabo ba'avnei shisha, used a marble. It seems to be like a greenish marble.
Or yellow marble.
Umermera, and white marble. Igadamre, some that say, ba'avnei kuchlo, used a blue marble. Shisha, and this greenish marble. Umermera, and a white marble. Afik safa va'ayel safa. When he built the layers or the stones of the Mikdash, he would go one level in, one level out, one level in, one level out, in order that they should provide a ability for the sid, the plaster that he was going to place on it, that would be able to hold, because otherwise if it was just smooth or flat, it wouldn't hold. So therefore he built them one in, one out, in order that it would be in and out, which would allow for the sid at each level to be held in place. So he thought, after he had plastered it, he thought that he would basically gold plate the inside of the Mikdash. And while the Rabbanan Shavke, leave it like it is, the Hachi Shapir Tvei, here it looks nicer. The Mechseki, the Vata Diyamo, it looks like the waves of the sea, or waves of the ocean. Since it looks like the waves of the ocean, that both was aesthetically pleasing, as well as a message.
Which could represent, the waves of the sea could represent the tchelet, like the tchelet is dom el yam, a yam dom el shemayim, a shemayim dom el kisei hakavod. So that made that the waves of the sea here also were a similar reminder, like the tzitzit are, and have a person focus on shemayim and on the kisei hakavod and on kodesh baruch hu.
Then the Gemara comes back to our original question. How was Baba Barbuta able to give advice to the king? So first we asked, how did Baba give the type of advice that he gave? The type of advice he gave was to take down the Mikdash in order to rebuild it. That we already know, the Gemara gave us an introduction that one is not allowed to take down a Beit Knesset to build another Beit Knesset. So the first question, the Gemara, is how did Baba Barbuta give such an advice? Now the Gemara wants to know, the basic premise is, how could he give advice at all to the king or to Herod? Why was Daniel punished? Because he gave advice to, unsolicited advice to Nebuchadnezzar. Because over there, it says in Daniel, when Daniel interprets the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, and he tells him that eventually he's going to be deposed as the king. For a year, he's going to spend time where he's going to live amongst the animals until he recognizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the real king. And then he says to him, Lahen, Malka, he says to you, the king, Milka Yishaperlach, my advice should be good to you. So he gives him this unsolicited advice. Remove your iniquities with tzedakah, with kindness or righteousness. And your iniquities with kindness towards the poor. And that will extend the time of your tranquility of your kingdom. Meaning that if you want to delay this punishment from happening, do tzedakah. do chesed. So here, Daniel gives unsolicited advice to Nebuchadnezzar in order to help him out. Uchtiv, and it says, Kol amata al Nebuchadnezzar malka. Everything that Daniel said, or everything that was in the dream, came true to Nebuchadnezzar. Uchtiv, and it says, how long did it take before it came true? Liktzat yachin triasar. It took 12 months before the dream came true. So the delay between the dream and the execution of the dream, or the dream coming true, was a delay of 12 months. That delay was caused by the advice that Daniel gave to Nebuchadnezzar. So now Gemara says, how did Bava ben Buta then give advice to Herod? So Gemara gives one answer. There's a difference between a non-Jewish king versus the Avda here. This Eved, who is, even though he's not a full-fledged Jew, nevertheless, he's Chayv Mitzvot Kenashim. And therefore, when it says, when you have some tasim alecha, right, when you have to put up a king mikervachecha, from amongst your brethren, maybe brethren only is to exclude, right, a non-Jewish king, but maybe an Eved, even though we, Aloha, say that it can also exclude an Eved, but you could see that maybe there's a difference. Giving advice to a king or non-Jewish king, which who's totally precluded from any Shaykhut leKlal Yisrael, to an Eved, an Eved Knani, who is a Chayev B'mitzvot, at least he has some Shaykhut to Klal Yisrael. Some people say it's different about the Mikdash, Dilo Malchut Lo Mitbane. Without the acquiescence, without the intervention of the king, right, it would not get built. Meaning that we know already from the time of Daniel, at the time of Ezra, that it needed permission from the Persian kings in order to rebuild it. And same over here. The fact is, without Herod, the Beit HaMikdash would not be renovated, would not be made any better. So he had to involve the king. So his advice to the king was not for the king's sake, but rather to improve or to have the Beit HaMikdash be renovated. Now the Gemara wants to know, Daniel minalan di'anesh. How do you know that Daniel was punished for the advice that he gave to Nebuchadnezzar? Ile mushuchti, because it says, by Dikra Esther Latach, that Esther calls to Latach in order to send messages to Mordechai. Vamarav, Hatach, Ze Daniel. Who is this Hatach? It's Daniel. Anich Lamandamar, what is the Hatach? So why is Daniel called Hatach? So that goes according to one Shech Hatchua mit Gudulato, that he was taken down from his Galut, meaning that they demoted him. So that demotion came about because he had given him advice to Nebuchadnezzar, this unsolicited advice to help out Nebuchadnezzar. But there are others that say, Lamandamar, Shekol Divri Machut Nechtachim Alpiv. Why is Daniel called Hatach? Not because of a negative connotation, but a positive connotation, that everything that the Machut did was done Alpiv. He gave advice. He was the one who basically pulled the strings of the king. So Ma'ikal Amemar, then how can you explain, or when was Daniel punished? So the Shadua, the Guva, Dar Yavata. Now the punishment is the famous story by Daniel that he was thrown into the lion's den or the lion's pit. So that was his punishment. He was punished with that because he gave that unsolicited advice to Nebuchadnezzar. Right now, the Gemara continues explaining, after it's gone on this tangent, the Gemara now returns to explaining the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Akol Kamin Haga Midina. Everything is according to the Haga Midina. So what does that mean, Akol Kamin Haga Midina? The Mishnah lays out all these different types of walls you can pick up. So what it put up? So what is this Kol Kamin Haga Midina? So Gemara says, Akol Latuye Mai. What does that come to include? Latuye Atra Denehige Behutza Vidafno. That it comes to include an area where the Minhag is Hutza and Dafno. Hutza are the leaves of the palm tree, and the dafna, as Rashi explains over here, that the dafna is a type of tree, antfei eitz armonim, shekoreim lor. It's the branches of a tree that they call the armonim.
Or bay trees.
But these are more delicate or less strong or walls with less integrity. Nevertheless, they are sufficient to be put up as walls or dividing walls that will protect between the neighbors or prevent the possibility of Hezekiah between the neighbors. As we saw earlier in the Gemara, we discussed this on the Mishnah, the Rabbeinu Tam over there suggests that from this we learn that when it comes to a minhag, when we say a kol minhag medina, it doesn't mean it's a free-for-all, that there is a minimum standard that's laid out. When we say a kol minhag medina, the Gemara still demands that there is some sort of minimum standard, and we see that in Allah also, that when it comes to minhag, when you say a kol minhag or minhag does not dictate when there's a mistake, or it's a minhag ta'ut, or where it's inappropriately, the action is, or the halacha is being inappropriately defined by the minhag. Minhag works, again, when it reaches the minimum standard that the Gemara lays out, or in the case where the minhag is well-founded and not a ta'ut. Now the Gemara continues. Lefikach in nafala kotel amakom vavanim shoshneim. Since both of them are obligated to put up the wall, if the wall falls down and the stones are there, we say that they divide them evenly. Both the space and the stones are divided evenly. The Gemara says pshita. Of course, lo tzricha. We do need it. The Gemara says pshita. Of course they split. If they have to both contribute, of course they both have to split it evenly. So no, the nafal de shushuta de mechad min ayu, that it fell into one, the possession of one of the two property. Oh, inami de faninu chad de shushuta de day. Or one of them moved the stones or the wall into their personal property. Maudutain, what I have thought, and they have a idach hamotzi mechaver ala varaya. I would have thought the other party now becomes hamotzi mechaver ala varaya, because we say in general that when a person has something in his possession, then he's muchzak in the davar. If he's muchzak in the davar, the other party has to say hamotzi mechaver ala varaya. Kamash malon, that we don't say that over here. Over here, we don't say hamotzi mechaver ala varaya. We discussed in the Mishnah, again, you could go back to Daf Bet, we discussed in the Mishnah why Tosu says it's different than the Gemara in Baba Betzia. Even though Abayit Valiyah, there, the Gemara does entertain the possibility that if it fell into the possession of one of them, that that would be a determining factor, and it would be a motzi mechaver ala varaya. So we discussed over there the difference between, or the differences about the motzi mechaver ala varaya. What does that mean? What is that? Is that a hachra'a or a birur? Over here, Tosus tries to distinguish in the cases themselves and says the cases are different because one of the safek was nolad. The safek in the case of the Bayit Valiya was only nolad after the building fell down, whereas over here, the safek was already nolad. Even if the wall was standing, we'd have a safek, or we'd have to divide between the two of them, and therefore when it falls into one of their properties, that's not a determining factor. So Tosus tries to preserve the idea that a motzi mechaver of ala varaya is really a birur. It's really something that has determination of ownership. We discussed in the Gemara and Baba Metzia that sounds like from there that it's really a achra, it's a due process. The fact that there is motzi mechaver of ala varaya is simply a way that Beis Din has a way to put the burden of proof on someone. They have to put it on someone, or if there is due process in order to do that. Alright, so again, you could look at the Tosus. We discussed it there on the Daf Bet, on the Mishnah. We also discussed it in Abayit Valiyah, on Daf Kuftu Tetzayin, when the Gemara discusses the Motzi Mechavero, Alavarayah over there. So now the Gemara continues. V'chein begina. When it comes to a gina, makom shenagdu l'gdor, mechayivin oto. When it comes to a garden, a place where they put up a geder, then we mechayivim to put up the geder, to jointly put up. Mar says, aguf akash, you have an internal stereo, a mart. V'chein begina. So it sounds like by a gina, makom shenagdu l'gdor, that a garden is a place where they normally did put up fences, then mechayivin oto. Hastamo, the inference from that would be, otherwise, in mechayivin oto, you wouldn't put it up. Same as seifa, then what are you going to say? In the seifa, aval bika'ah, when it comes to bika'ah, makom shenagdu shelo l'gdor, ein mechayvin oto. When it comes to bika'ah, it's a place that they don't put up a geder, ein mechayvin oto. Hastamo, from there it sounds like the stam, the default case, is mechayvin oto, that we would be mechayvim. So why, how could that be? Ashle stam gina amart lo, when it comes to gina, you say you don't, there's no requirement. When it's the default status of a gina, is that you don't have to put up a wall, or you can't compel the other party to put up a wall. Stam b'kal mipa'i, then you're going to suggest by b'kal that the default status should be to put up a wall. We know already by gina there's more reason, or there's more reason for hezek ria, and therefore there should be a more compelling reason to force the parties to put up a wall. So how could you suggest that the default by gina is not to put up a wall, and the default by b'kal is to put up a wall? So the reading of the Mishnah is difficult in this case. So Gemara, Amar Abaye, Abaye suggests this reading of the Gemara. Achik Amar, v'chein stam gina, when it comes to stam gina, umakom shenagdu l'gdor bebik'ah. So the second statement of the Mishnah after v'chein begina, makom shenagdu l'gdor, is referring to the bik'ah. So a gina, which is stam, the default status of a gina is to put up a wall, and a place where in a bik'ah the minhag is to put up a wall, I mean the default is not to put up a wall, but here the minhag was to put up a wall, mechayvin oto. Then we obligate the parties to put up the wall. Samarle Rovo im kain mayaval. Well, then the Mishnah continues. It says aval bebikah, aval bebikah, meaning that the last statement of the Mishnah went v'chein stam gina umakom shenagdu l'gdor bebikah. So we're already talking about a bikah. So why would the Mishnah continue aval bebikah? It should say aval b'makom shelo nagdu l'gdor. Why does it repeat the word bikah? It means that before this point in time, it must not have been talking about a bikah. Elama Rova. Rova explains the Mishnah. This is the way we explained the Mishnah when we read it. Halachik Tani. This is what it means. V'chein stam gina. A stam gina is kimakom shenagdu l'gdor dami. The default status of a gina is a place where the minhag is to put up a wall. Well, you can compel the parties, and therefore we force them to put up the wall. When it comes to a bika, the default status of bika is k'makom shelo nagu. The minhag, the default minhag, is that it's a place that they do not put up walls. We do not obligate him. So in the case of a gina, the default is to put up a wall, and therefore you can compel the parties to put up the wall. By a bika, the default status is not to put up a wall, and therefore you cannot compel the parties to put up the wall. And therefore, unless the minhag is different, I mean the minhag by gina is not to put it up, or the minhag by bika is to put it up, then the default will be as laid out in the Mishnah. So now the Gemara says, okay, in a case where it's in the bika, it's makom shelo nagu, we say that the one party puts up the wall and he doesn't compel the other party to do it. If he wants to build a wall in the bika, he moves into his own property. He builds a wall and he makes chazit. So Gemara wants to know, my chazit, what is this chazit that he's going to put up? He turns the corners or the sharp edges outward. So Gemara says, why doesn't he put the sharp edges inward? So Gemara says, Avid Chavrei Nami Milabar. Because if he does that, his friend will replicate, he'll put up stones with their sharp edges facing towards him, and then he'll say, listen, we both contributed to the wall. Because we know later on in the, the Mishnah, it says, if they both contributed to the wall, how do we show that they both contributed to the wall? We put a chazit on both sides. Zavamar, so he'll say, Didi Videyu. Then he'll say, it belongs to both of us. Gemara says, Yochi, Hashanami Goisle Chavrei. Right, so he says, listen, you know what he can do? He can go ahead, if he puts the points or the sharp edges of the stones outward, he can come and he can shave them down. He can cut down the wall to that side, the sharper edges or the unfinished edges of the wall are to his side. He can come, smooth them out or cut them apart. So Amalei, and then he can say, Didevi Dideu, because he can say, look, they both look the same on both sides. Gemara says, Gizuza Midea Yidia. That is obvious. When someone cuts down a rock or flattens out the edges of the stones, that is obvious. As opposed to where a person puts up an additional binyan with sharp edges on both sides, that's not going to be obvious. But when it comes to the fact that they've smoothed out or they've cut down the side, one can see the markings on the stone that smoothed out or cut down the edges. Igadam, right? There's some that say, Amar Avuna Michva de Karno Milagav, that he puts actually the sharper edges of the corners inward. So Gemara says, Vinadavil Milabar, let him face them outward. Gemara says, Gaizle Chavreis, Freyven is going to cut them down. Vamar di David di Dehud, because he'll smooth out both that side, and then the both sides will be small, and he'll say that we both built the wall. Yoche Hashanami Laife Le Chavre. So why can't his friend do the same thing? I mean, if you turn the sharper edges inward, then his friend can simulate that on the outside. Meaning that he can go ahead and put up a new face to the wall. He'll put up a new face with the sharper edges facing towards him. You'll say that they're both of ours. Then he'll say it belongs to both of us. As the Gemara says, no, that when it comes to the addition of another layer that gives this rougher edge to it, when you add that on, it's obvious that you've added on that layer. Gemara says, "V'ha mi b'chutz k'tani." Our Mishnah says, "Mi b'chutz," that he puts them outward. So how are you going to explain, according to this lesson of Rav Huna, says that it's inward, how are you going to say, "Mi b'chutz" means outward? So Tosa says, it's not a t'yufta, because you could still explain the word "mi b'chutz" here to mean, "shebalei t'chutz l'choma," that sticks out of the wall. So the b'chutz here will be outside of the wall, not to the outside of the wall. So it would be sticking out of the wall, but in the inside of the wall. So therefore, it's not an easy way to explain the Mishnah, but nevertheless, it could be explained that way, and therefore, it's not a tiyufta. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan says, Nishaye ba'amta milabar, that he should go ahead and place a facing of tit of an ama barosha koto mi bachutz. He should place on some sort of big facing of an ama worth of cement on the outside of the wall, either towards the top or across the face of the wall, will make it obvious that this is the outer side of the wall. So Gemara says, "V'navid milagav." Why can't he do that from the inside? So Gemara says, "Avid gavrei achavrei milabar." If he goes ahead and does it on the inside, then his friend can replicate the same siman on the outside or facing towards him. And then he'll say that it's mine and his. So if that's the case, hashanami the kafilei chavrei. Right, so then when his friend can go and peel off whatever siman is here, he can go ahead and peel it off. If it's just plaster, an additional plaster level that's on the top, he can go ahead and peel it away. V'amar didividehu. I can say that it belongs to both of us. Gemara says, kilufa mida yedia. When you peel it away, it's obvious that that is the case. Now, that's the girsa that we have in our Gemara, was kilufa. There are other girsot, which is kipula. Right, that the kipula mida yedia. And when it says kipula, it means the fold, right, which would be the opposite of the Lashon of Kiluf, of the peeling away, that went ahead, he goes ahead and he's Kipula, right, when he doubles it, when he goes ahead and does it, it'll be obvious that he goes ahead and has replicated it. Now, if you read it that way, then the Gemara reads, instead of saying that he removed or he peeled away the cement, what you would have to read the Gemara is like this, right? So that Avid Milagav will do on the inside, so Avdei Chavri Milabar, his friend will do replicate on the outside. Remember, Didehu, Iochiashanami, the Kopulei Chavre. So over here, his friend can do the same thing. Instead of saying, right, here, kapil means to remove, but rather means to double it. And his friend, well, go ahead. Even if he did it on the outside, he'll pour on the inside. He'll pour it, double it up, or he'll fold it over. Or he can actually remove it, right? Either way, how somehow he'll make it so that it's not obvious. So I says, kipulam ida yidia. People know where the excess cement was placed on the wall, that'll be obvious. So even if he pulls it away later on, if he rolls it over, or he flips it over, he doubles it, it'll be obvious where it was placed originally. Now, hutza, what do you do with these palm branches? How do you indicate who is the owner when the wall is put up by a single individual with palm branches? Amar Rav Nachman, sinufe. Yerichei milabar. You place the softer ends towards the outside. What that means exactly is not so clear. Right? Rashi says, Roshei al-chutzim yeshev l'tzad sadeh chavero. The heads, right, the points of the chutzim, he'll place the outside. Okay, so nefa chutzim. So when he places them together, when he's opening them up or placing them together, he'll point the pointy edges towards the outside. When one ends and he now puts in the other one, he'll leave the pointy edges facing out towards the outside. So that's how you will do it. The other possibility is Yisnifa Yirichei would be the, instead of being the Yerech, right, but Yirichei can be from the word Rach, means the soft edge. So is it, if you say it's the hard edge that he places the outside, which seems to be what Rashi is describing over here, the Roshei Hutzim, the edges of the Hutzim go to the outside, or you can remember it as Rach would be just the opposite, which means that the soft edges are towards the outside. So Rashi says, she should do this towards the inside. Why is he doing it the outside? Avinami Chavrei, because his friend can simulate it. So the Bar, the Chavrei Milabar, he'll do it on the outside and simulate it. Vamar Didi Vidadehu, he'll say that we both put it up. Rashi says, Yochi Ashinami Goyiz, he can cut off the edges. I mean, if it's the sharper edges of the heads of the palm branches that are facing the outside, he can snip them off. Vishadilei, and he'll throw them away. So Vamar Didi Vidadehu, and then he can say they're both of ours. So Misrek Lei Tina. Now, so the solution to that is that he'll put plaster on that side. Hashanami at the chaver bekoliflei. He'll come along and peel away the plaster from that side. So when it says kilufa mida yidia, if he peels away the plaster, it'll be obvious that he peeled away the plaster. If it's obvious that he peeled away the plaster, we'll know what it is. So the solution by hutza will be either to face the sharp edges or the soft edge. We don't know which one it is, to the outside, and then place plaster on it so it's obvious that that's the side, that's the outside, and that they both parties did not contribute over here. And even if he peels it away, it'll be obvious the peeling. Abaya mar hutza late late. When it comes to hutza, there is no solution to this problem. Ela b'shtara, except with the shtara. So now, that's the idea of Abaye is that you couldn't know. When you peel off from hutza, when you peel off from palm branches or palm leaves, then you will not know that the cement was peeled away. When you peel it away from a wall, from stones, then you might know it. But when you peel it away from hutza, it would not be obvious. And therefore, the only way to ensure that it's obvious that you were the only one to contribute to the wall is to get a shtar, to get a dim to sign on a shtar to say that you're the sole contributor, or in the case where they both contribute, to get the shtar that indicates that they both contributed to the wall over here. Now the Gemara continues with the Mishnah. If they both agree to put up the wall, then we put it up in the middle, and they split if it divides up. Why in our Mishnah does it suggest when they both put up the wall, they face out the sharper edges of the stones in both directions to indicate that they both put up the wall? So why don't we do neither of them? Put neither have them have sharp edges facing out, and we'll also know in that case that it belongs to both of them. Now the problem in our Mishnah is a case where one of them already put up the wall, or his half of the wall, and the sharp edges are facing out, are facing towards the outside. So if we leave it like that, then it's going to leave it as an indication that it belongs solely to this individual. So Leo Avi the Chavrei, if his friend doesn't do it, Amar Dideu, then this one individual put it up first is going to say it belongs to me. So only to rectify it, we say put up the other half of the wall in a similar manner for the other party, in order that they will equal out their claims over here. So that means that the whole second section of the Mishnah, this whole last piece of the Mishnah, is all about protecting against cheaters. Because the whole reason where we're going to put up the wall is where one individual went ahead and preempted and put up the wall. Now we're afraid that he's going to lie and say the whole wall belongs to him. So therefore the Mishnah suggests that he should put up the wall identical on the other side. He should put up identical so that they can't cheat. So that's the whole reason for this part of the Mishnah. It says, wasn't the case right before that the same thing? Why, when he puts up the wall solely by himself, do we say he faces the sharper edges to the outside? In order to indicate that he was the sole individual put up the wall. So over there also he's trying to protect against someone making a claim that they both put up the wall. So Amarle, no, Bishlama Resha Tana Dina. No, in the Resha, the Gemara is telling us the din. The din is that he's not obligated, not compelled, the other party is not compelled to put up the wall with you. Once we know the din that he's not compelled to put up the wall, the Mishnah tells you how to put up the wall when it's the one of the only one of the individuals contributing in order to ensure that it will be known that he's the only individual. So Mishum Dina Tana Takanta, and after it dealt with the din, it put in the way to rectify or to ensure that it was only one party is going to have a claim again on the wall. Hela Seifa Dina Ktani Takanta. The Seifa is not teaching us any din. It's not teaching us any new halacha. What? The fact that when both of them agree, they both have to contribute. And if they both contribute, if they both get the proceeds of the fallen wall and they half the property, that's obvious. That's all obvious. That's not a din that the Mishnah has to teach us. So therefore, the only thing that the Mishnah is teaching us is takanto, that the fact that they face the sharper edges out to both sides. If that's the case, then what you have a Mishnah just comes to teach you to protect against ramayim, against cheaters. So Ravina Ocha Behutse Askin, and we're dealing with palm branches over here. La Fuke Mide Abaye comes to exclude Abaye's position. Damar Hutsa Leite Takanto, that says that the Hutsa, the palm leaves have, or palm branches have no way to fix me except with the shtar. In order to indicate ownership, you need a shtar. Otherwise, there's no way to ensure that it would be known. So that's why our Mishnah says, the last piece over here, the last piece is talking about, even in Hutza, you should put up the sharper edges, or put up some, there is a way to indicate who put up the Hutza. That there is a way to get around what Abaye's claim is over here, and there is a way to have an indication of ownership through Hutza. And Abaye obviously is going to hold that, and that's what Tosfos points out over here, Abaye is going to hold that Sover the Shapri lay in the midnight takanto Ramai. That in Ochanami, the Mishnah is actually trying to indicate to an individual how to protect himself against the cheater. Once the Mishnah was dealing with the sugya of walls and how to put up walls, and then that last case in the ratio, even though Torah said din, Torah said how to protect yourself. So once it was dealing with protection, the Gemara continues and shows how to protect against Ramayim, even in the Seifa case, which is not a halacha, but simply a protection against Ramayim. Okay, we'll stop over here.